and welcome into another edition of the B Squared Podcast. Alongside Brian Vito, I'm Jordan Bernfield. Glad to have you along. Well, normally we start this podcast by telling you the Cubs' record. They are 59-38. Normally we tell you that they have the best record in baseball, and for a week or so they did not, but they're back to having it. But there's a lot bigger fish to fry on this week's show, and the biggest story in baseball as we record on Monday, July 25th, is that the Cubs have made a blockbuster deal to acquire Aroldis Chapman. In the trade the Cubs made, they gave up four players, including the top prospect in their organization, according to many, who is Gleyber Torres. He's an infielder in single A. They also traded away Adam Warren, so we can regale our favorite memories of the Adam Warren era in Chicago. And they also sent away Billy McKinney and Rashad Crawford, two minor league outfielders. You might remember the Cubs got McKinney in the trade, which also acquired Addison Russell for the Cubs. So, Brian, I think that this marks a moment in time because this is probably the first time in the Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer regime that the Cubs have made a move that people feel uneasy about for a number of reasons. First of all, what is your reaction to this trade?
Well, I'm just trying to figure out how we're going to fill 30 minutes of content here for this podcast in general with really nothing going on whatsoever.
It's
but
too bad there's no news. It really is. Yeah,
we're going to try to fill this anyway.
Yeah,
it's certainly uneasy. You're obviously forgetting how uneasy I felt losing DJ LeMahieu to the Rockies for Ian Stewart. But
I remember you had a moment of silence for him. I think it lasted about a second.
I'm not kidding. I'm fairly certain we were on the air doing a B-Squared show when that trade took place, or we were about to record a podcast right around Cubs convention weekend when the Cubs made that trade, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh,
believe
God.
It.
I remember crushing Ian Stewart on WGN.
He was brutes.
When he – what was that thing when he was in AAA and he was telling the Cubs to trade him? Remember that? And it was like, dude, you're hitting 196.
Yeah, dude, he had zero leverage. He did not play that very well.
No.
But I would say that this trade, you're right, has a little bit more significance than the Ian Stewart trade that I was referencing a second ago. But as far as a take is concerned, I mean, it's coming out of the oven right now, so I can't tell how hot and scorching it is. But if you... there's a lot of people that have mixed feelings or upset about it, and to them I totally understand. If you separate the baseball move from the stuff off the field, which I'm not sure you can do and quite frankly should do, but if we're just wrapping up that side of the business of the baseball aspect of it, it's an interesting take because rarely do you see a guy moved that's positioned so highly in MLB prospect land in Torres for a player that's with you for 2.5 months. So that took a little bit more to get over. I really don't care about losing McKinney and Adam Warren and Crawford. And good for them if this ends up probably being a good move for them. They'll have more room to grow and go into the big leagues. But I get it to a certain point. We can kind of, once I get your take, we can kind of break it down from the baseball perspective of why the Cubs chose to make this move and why I feel that they made this move. But there's certainly a lot of factors that go into it outside of just, hey, the Cubs traded for a closer and gave up a prospect for him.
Yeah, I think from a baseball standpoint, this is what I would say. This is a move that you make when you're a team trying to win the World Series today. That's what the Cubs did. They went out and got the best relief pitcher in the game. He is the only relief pitcher that anyone could get who throws as hard as he does. He is the only relief pitcher that could be acquired that provides you with the intimidation factor that he does. And he immediately makes the Cubs a much better baseball team in the major leagues. And there's no doubt in that. I mean, this guy is absolutely, in my opinion, the best reliever in the sport. And the Cubs went out and got him.
He makes other guys look like that scene in Rookie of the Year when Henry Rowengardner swings after the pitch has been in the catcher's glove for like 3 seconds. That's what it reminds me of.
Right, exactly. I mean, he throws, and his average velocity, I think, is 99.4 miles an hour, and he's thrown pitches at 105 this year, which is preposterous. So the talent level is off the charts. In terms of what they gave up for him, I was surprised at how much they had to part with and how much they were willing to part with, given that this guy is a rental. And when there were reports last night, as we record on this Monday, the deal happened this afternoon, and last night is when we got word that this deal might be happening. There were also reports that the Cubs were trying to get him to agree to a four-year extension. Had that been the case, I would have understood this move a lot more from a baseball perspective, because you ensure having the best closer for the next 4 years. So after this season, they're going to have to figure out whether he's going to want to come back and whether they want to pay him to come back. And obviously it's going to depend upon whether this move leads them to the ultimate goal of winning the World Series. Billy McKinney, from people I've spoken to, sounds like people have soured on him a little bit. He's more of a fourth outfielder type. I can't begin to tell you anything about Rashad Crawford. I don't know. It doesn't sound like he's much to lose. Adam Warren did not work out here. I think he's a talented pitcher. I think it basically renders the Starlin Castro trade Castro for nothing, which is a little bit surprising to me. And in terms of Gleyber Torres, I read Baseball America like you do. I read MLB Pipeline like you do. I've never seen Torres play. I know that a lot of people are high on him. He's got very impressive numbers for a 19-year-old, and I'm sure that he's going to turn into a very good player. The other side is the Cubs have Addison Russell already. The Cubs have Javier Baez already, and the Cubs have Ben Zobrist signed for 3 more years, so I don't really know where Torres would fit, at least in the immediate future or even the next 3 or 4 years. So those are all my baseball thoughts on it. The other thought, Brian, is that I'm usually that, you know me, and you and I have been friends for a long time, and you know that my first reaction to many things like this is, why can't a team have more integrity? Why can't a team show what they stand for? But here's where I fall on this. He was never charged. While the reports about what he allegedly did are disgusting, if true, and I don't condone any of that, and I don't think that any of that is right, and I think domestic violence is a obvious horrible problem in our society. If he wasn't charged, and he is employed by Major League Baseball, and both of these things are true, and he has also been suspended 30 games for his conduct despite not being charged, should the Cubs be blamed for acquiring a player who is already employed in Major League Baseball when he is a player that, in their business, brings them closer to winning a championship? And from a business decision, that might be a $1 billion move. That's my ultimate question to you. So how would you react to that?
No, it's a fair question, and I see it from both sides. I'm more of the this wouldn't prevent me from making the move if you feel that it was an isolated incident and it doesn't really, I don't want to say totally reflect his character, but it doesn't become a problem within not only the clubhouse, but you don't see it becoming a recurring problem. What he did was clearly awful. Total scumbag move. And I understand why it might dampen the excitement for some people to acquire someone like that. I will say, though, the Cubs are not the first team to employ someone with less than questionable character.
Yeah.
And if you go down the line, I mean, you look at the NFL and even the Bears with, and I know it's a different situation, but Brandon Marshall, who tried to show some contrition, and I know people were upset with Chapman for not being more forthcoming with that when this incident first came down. However, you know, the Cubs, I know some people weren't overly thrilled with the statement, that it seemed too contrived and too political and whatnot, but I don't know what else they could have done. I would like to be educated on what else could have been done to satisfy some people who were a little upset about the move. But at the end of the day, I'm kind of with you on this wouldn't have stopped me from making the move. Theo Epstein and his staff were hired to win a World Series for the team. They don't have a band of misfit guys that are all bad dudes. They acquired a guy who's made a just egregious mistake, that it's not even like one of those like, oh, slap on the wrist mistakes. It was pretty bad. Really bad, actually. But
if true, because it's all allegations. There was no, I mean, the police report did not provide enough evidence to conclude what happened or didn't happen. And because they didn't have enough evidence and there were conflicting stories between Chapman and his girlfriend, they, I mean, there were no charges brought. I hear exactly what you're saying. I would just interject that I think if he did all this, it's morally in every way reprehensible, but we don't know what happened. And I'm not trying to dampen the situation or cheapen it by saying that, but because he wasn't charged, that's more of a criminal justice problem in our country and a greater issue in our society than it is a Cubs issue here, right? Like, if he wasn't charged and that something terrible occurred and there wasn't enough evidence brought forth, or because his girlfriend chose not to bring charges on him, that might also be a reflection of the problems with domestic violence culture in our society. But those are all things above this move. To me, I think that Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer and Tom Ricketts and the whole Ricketts family knew that there would be blowback from a move like this in the immediate moment that it happened. That's why Ricketts made the statement that he did publicly. That's why Aroldis Chapman made the statement he did publicly. I mean, they didn't have to. They had to address it. But I've never seen a team release statements immediately after acquiring a player. To me, they probably feel like 2 days from now, if tomorrow night, right, as we record on Monday, right before the Cubs-Sox series, if tomorrow night Aroldis Chapman is used in his first game with the Cubs and the Cubs win and Chapman comes in and throws 105 miles an hour, I may be wrong, but I think a lot of fans are going to go, wow, look at the guy the Cubs just got. This is incredible, right?
That's for sure going to happen. Please don't give – it's hard to tell an entire fan base this, and we know fan bases as a whole, especially people who attend the game, sometimes don't do the brightest things in person. Do not give them a standing ovation like a Jose Reyes or Ryan Braun situation.
Right. Yeah.
You're right. It's going to be – people are going to be excited to see ooh and ah at 105 miles an hour. The only thing I will say to – what we talked about is like the problem with, you know, society as far as concealing some things from the victim's perspective is I really don't put that much stock into not being charged solely because just reading up on some of the DV stuff, it happens a lot because of you're worried about things recurring and you feel trapped and that sort of thing. So I don't want to comment on that because I really don't understand the situation.
Right.
But I'm with you about the whole you're right, it's a big problem, and the Cubs addressed it because they knew it was a problem, but it wouldn't have prevented me if they felt like it was an isolated incident about making this move. Definitely.
Right. And the other, I mean, to me, it's also here's the bottom line, okay? If he did what he was alleged to have done, then he should, if there were enough evidence, he should have been charged and he should have been incarcerated or whatever, right? If he was not charged and there was no charges brought against him in any way in this case, which there were not, then he is employable in society, right? I mean, it's not like the Cubs brought this guy out of a prison and said, we're signing him because...
Is that in the California Penal League, like Rick Vaughn, Major League?
Right, he's not. So the point is, I was going to make that joke, but I knew you would get there. So the bottom line is, he is employable in our society, right? In the eyes of the law, he is not a criminal because he has not been convicted of a crime. So the Yankees had the right to trade for him. They did. The Dodgers chose not to because at the time they didn't know how long he would be suspended or if he would be suspended or if he was going to face criminal prosecution. So I don't want this to sound like I'm justifying the move, but what I'm saying is if you're the Cubs and you're a business and your business objective is to win a World Series so that you can make the most money for your business humanly possible, then this player brings you closer to your desired goal, which is to win a World Series and make $1 billion for your franchise. So based on that, the Cubs have the right to make this move, and from a baseball perspective, this makes a lot of sense. And I, like you said, I don't blame anyone for feeling the way they do. I feel uneasy about it. It's the first time that I can remember, at least with the Cubs, them bringing in a player that has this kind of odor to him. And I think that it means what is true, but maybe has to be underscored now, is that the Cubs are like everybody else, right? Every team talks about character and morality and the right way and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, sports are business, and they're in the business of winning. And the Cubs put themselves in a better position to win baseball games because of this trade, regardless of what it says about them morally, regardless of what people may feel about it. And that's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we'd love for every team to be full of David Rosses and Coy Hill and Curtis Grandersons. But if you're not, the reality is, if you have nine of those guys, well, maybe not Curtis Granderson because he's pretty good, but if you have nine David Rosses and nine Coy Hills on the field, you're not going to win very many baseball games.
No.
It's a fine line. It's tough to talk about, you know, be quite frank. But those are kind of the two sides of the off-field story. As far as, I kind of wanted to get back because I wanted to get over some of like the baseball aspect of it. And I said, obviously, I agree with you that it's a lot for a Torres, for a rental. Here is my, again, another scorching take just out of the oven. So a lot of...
You should be on ESPN First Take.
Exactly.
You and Stephen A can battle.
Yeah, I'll just start screaming into the microphone big time.
Right off the Cavaliers.
Yeah, I'm writing off the Cavaliers. I'm going to call out Kevin Durant and threaten him too while I'm at it. But I would say this to the people who are down on the trade baseball-wise, not necessarily from just they gave up too much, but thinking that someone like Chapman's really not going to tilt the scale for them to win a World Series. And I understand that logic. But here's the thing, is that they're using a 162-game marathon analogy, saying that a relief pitcher really doesn't give you that many more wins throughout the course of the season. Yes, that's been proven. Great. We understand. The Cubs are not looking to add someone that will increase their regular season win total by one or two games. That's not what this move's about. They clearly understand that they're heading for October. They understand that they want to tilt the game-by-game odds every single day during the postseason. Aroldis Chapman certainly does that. Not only does he do that, but the other argument I want to thwart is, well, the Cubs didn't need help in the ninth inning. They're 55-1 when leading, entering the ninth, and they've only lost five games when they've been leading entering the seventh inning. That's a great point. However, in the playoffs, you're not facing the Phillies. You're not worrying about trying to protect a three-run lead in the seventh inning against the Phillies. Yeah. The math changes when you're playing a high-quality team, a high-quality offense. So that, A, throws that math out the window. B, I'd be anxious to see what the Cubs' record is when they are tied in the seventh inning later or when they're trailing, because we know they haven't had a lot of success out from coming from behind late in ball games, albeit yesterday being an aberration when they are able to get a nice win against the Brewers. I bet their record isn't that great. Now you have a chance. It's not like Aroldis Chapman's going to be pitching in an eighth inning when they're down a run, but it gives you the slide down option of using Pedro Strop in a situation like that, or a Mike Montgomery or a Travis Wood, when before they were saving all these guys for the situation where they're up. So I just think in a small sample, this does tilt the scales quite a bit for the Cubs to potentially advance to the World Series. So that is kind of my counter argument to people who say, well, he's really not going to change their odds that much of winning the World Series.
Everything you said is exactly right. That's the bottom line. This is all about October. And this move is also about, Beto, this is about acquiring Chapman so that the Nationals and the Giants don't.
Totally agree.
Right? I mean, this is about there are going to be a lot of people who will say that they would never have made this move and that you try to win no matter what it takes with the players you have and not sacrificing your morality. And that's fine. Anyone can feel the way they want to. I don't begrudge anyone. However, if that's going to be your opinion, it can't also be your opinion if they were to lose to Chapman in the playoffs that, you know, they should have gone out and made a different move or whatever, right? Because this is the move for the marquee reliever. This is the guy that, like you said, tilts the scales and the odds in the biggest postseason games. If the Cubs are up a run in the eighth inning of an NLCS game against the Nationals, I like my chances a whole lot better with Aroldis Chapman coming into the ninth inning than I do with Hector Rondon. And that's not to slight Rondon. I think he's a really good pitcher. I think that he is an excellent developing right-handed pitcher who can be very good for a long time. But we're talking about adding the best closer in baseball since Mariano Rivera, okay? This guy is automatic, lockdown, blow-you-away velocity that we've really never seen before. So this is a game-changer, and it's also the intimidation factor that exists when you have a bullpen that is going to be tough enough on an opponent that if you don't score against the starters who have been the best rotation for most of the season in Major League Baseball, that you're not going to win. I mean, look at what the Royals were able to do just last year, right? I mean, you didn't want to get to the Royals bullpen because you knew that your probability and your odds of scoring went way down as the game went along. And so it changes the way that you approach a nine-inning game. And like you said, acquiring a relief pitcher is never going to be about a WAR, because a WAR number is calculated factoring in what it would be for a season, right? Factoring in what it would be over 162 games. This is about, I've got to win four games against a great team in an NLCS, or three games against a great team in an NLDS, or four games to win in the World Series against the best team in the American League. And if I have the best pitcher coming out of the bullpen that exists on the planet, I have a better chance to win those games, period end.
I completely agree. And you know, again, makes for compelling podcasts when the hosts agree. We said this last time. But when...
Let's start scorching fire and, you know, all this stuff and start yelling and screaming. That's what sells these days.
I know, apparently so.
Yeah.
However, I think the point you made about the intimidation factor and whatnot, I totally agree. I think... You know me, I'm a numbers guy. I love analytics. I think it's phenomenal that it's evolved so much this way, and I kind of tend to shun people who don't even consider it at all a factor. However, what scares sometimes analytics guys is when there's things that you can't quantify that actually matter. And this is one of those things to me, is that yes, it matters. When you're down in a short series or a one-game do-or-die situation, when you fall behind 2 or 3 nothing early and you're going to yourself, you know what, we got to catch up now because I might have to go through Strope, Rondon, and Chapman in that order, and I may not get a better chance than I have in the fourth inning. It changes the manager's thinking. It changes the player's thinking. And that's not something that necessarily can be extrapolated over a 162-game season. It can be in a short series or a do-or-die scenario. So I think it changes a lot of things. And you're right, the Royals, dominant bullpen. Having a dominant bullpen does not guarantee you postseason success. However, it does increase your likelihood and your odds. And the Cubs just turned their biggest weakness, not being a huge weakness, they were middle of the pack with bullpen, but it turns it into a formidable strength when that time comes when they're in a short series.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. And I think that what Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer's job is to do, like we were saying before, is to build a team that can win the World Series, right? That is their job. That is their mission statement. When they got here, when Tom Ricketts bought the team, right, in 2009, the statement was about being, you know, the good neighbors and restoring Wrigley and to win the World Series, right? This move gives you a better chance to win the World Series. The one weakness of the Cubs was their bullpen. I mean, you could argue that it's the back end of the rotation maybe, but it's their bullpen. And now their bullpen is legitimately good. I mean, you now have Chapman, Rondon, Strope, Montgomery. You have Wood. You might even say Nathan, right? I mean, I don't know how much you're going to get from Joe Nathan, but you might even say Nathan is a guy that is viable for you. That's six guys, at least five, okay? And we don't know what Brian Mattis, how he factors in, if he factors in. The point is, you now have five relievers that are viable in big spots in postseason games when you need them. And last year, you didn't have that. And you now have the best reliever. So, again, I feel conflicted about this. I do have mixed feelings on it. There is a part of me that wishes that the Cubs didn't have to do this from both the baseball side and the moral side of it. But I also realize that these are realities in sports, and sports are business, and many teams that win without 25 Boy Scouts or 53 Boy Scouts or 15 Boy Scouts or whatever the number is on your particular team or a particular sport. And I still think that even if Aroldis Chapman is the guy on the mound saving Game 6 or Game 7 of the World Series, and the Cubs win the World Series this year, I'm inclined to think that my reaction in that moment is not going to be, man, I wish they didn't acquire Aroldis Chapman to win this. I think my reaction is going to be to break down in tears because they won the World Series, right? I mean, does that make me a bad person? I don't feel like that does. I feel like that makes me a sports fan, and that's what we are, and that's why we do this, and that's why we follow this stuff. So I think that's no one is here to say that any of what is alleged to have happened with him is condonable. It's reprehensible and appalling if it's true. But again, he's not charged with a crime, and he is employable, and he has the right to work, assuming that he is not charged as a criminal. And if he has the right to work, then the Cubs have the right to pick him up. And if you as a fan decide that you don't want to root for the Cubs anymore, or you don't feel morally like you can support what they're doing, that's your right. And I don't begrudge anyone feeling the way they want to feel. But I'm choosing, as a sports fan, to continue to follow the team that I'm a fan of and still be a fan, because I'm a Cubs fan. That's what I've been, and that's what I'm going to be. And I don't feel that they changed that for me. And I know that a lot of people are reacting in a lot of, ways across the spectrum on Twitter today and on other social media. And I can't begrudge people for feeling the way they feel. That's just how I feel about it.
No, I it makes a lot of sense, and every opinion is fair. I just think it is going to end up being a good baseball move for this team. And we talked about all the reasons why. You talked about the amount of guys they have that Joe can just rely on in October now. And the other thing that it does is you could shorten up your pen. You got a bunch of guys you trust out there. You don't need to necessarily carry an extra reliever that gives maybe an extra spot on the bench for a pinch hitter or something along those lines. I don't think the Cubs are done, personally. So I think they're going to go out and still acquire a left-handed hitting outfielder that I've been saying for a while. I really, really think Josh Reddick's a great fit. I know Jay Bruce is a free agent. That doesn't appeal to me all that much. I don't think they're totally done yet. This trade that they made official today, it gives them 6 days to think about any other depth pieces they could add. But a rental outfielder, they're clearly in go-for-it mode, as evident by today. I really like the Montgomery trade as well. I think that was a home run in theory, so we'll see what happens here.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that they've made their team a lot better. I'm still really interested in what else they're going to do. And I think that honestly, what this move does, Beto, is it puts more pressure on them to win, right? I mean, this is, they rented a reliever for 3 months to win the World Series in 2016. And now the goal has to be to win the World Series right now. I know it already was, but this is like, to me, this is Theo and Jed saying to Joe Maddon and to the players, it's on you now, right? This is them saying, go win the World Series. We've given you everything we can. We have done everything. We have taken the backlash publicly. We have given you the best relief pitcher who exists on earth today. Go win with them and go win the World Series and bring it to Chicago. And now it's about them going and doing it.
Yeah, well, I just honestly think this whole move was a knee-jerk reaction to wanting to win the Crosstown Cup this week. That's what I think.
That's why Chris Sale threw the tantrum on Saturday, right? He didn't want to pitch in the Crosstown Series?
Well, apparently he's starting Thursday now, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, he's starting Thursday. Well, he didn't want to have the Arrieta Sale matchup. I don't know. That whole thing was so weird.
It's the most maybe unbelievable thing I'll hear in my lifetime when it regards to a baseball locker room, like a non-violent sort of confrontation. It's just so silly, I think, is like the good way to put it. Just unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, it just the whole thing. I obviously, Cubs Sox is always going to have some storylines, but this one, when I heard about it, like I was not home. I was preoccupied. I was at a concert, and then like I'm getting texts from people about this.
Your text from us.
Yeah, and I was like, what? Right, and I was like, what the hell is like? What are you talking about? And so then I had to go on my phone during a break in the action to find out what was happening, and the whole thing is sort of still confusing as to how he could have been so viscerally angry about a uniform. But it will be cool to see him pitch at Wrigley on Thursday. I think he's a great pitcher, and I happen to enjoy watching him a lot. And I think that the Crosstown Series, you know, a lot of people, I think it's become this sort of in vogue thing to say no one cares about it and it's lost its buzz. And I do think it's lost a lot of buzz, and I do think that in Chicago the media might drum it up a little bit more than it needs to be, because it maybe captures the general fascination more than it does the hardcore baseball fan in Chicago. But I still think that they're fun games. I mean, I still think that it's fun when the two teams get to play each other, and the atmosphere at the ballpark is generally good. And I just think it's become sort of like the en vogue statement to say, I don't care about Cubs White Sox. Oh, I'm an evolved baseball fan. Come on, give me a break.
Dude, I'm totally with you on that, because it started when you got some meatballs that care entirely too much about the series. So then you have the people that want to pretend like they know so much that they have to take the exact opposite point of view and say that the series sucks. I don't care. It's just like any other series. It's like, you know, it's okay to not hate everything. That's what I want to say.
Right. But why can't people like things?
Yeah, I enjoy the series. I look forward to it. No, it's not the end of the world. No, I don't think it's a big deal, but I'm glad that they play as opposed to not play. I know it doesn't mean anything. I barely remember who won the games last year. I remember I went to a game when Arrieta hit a home run at Wrigley and the Cubs won. But
didn't he need a home run off of Jose Quintana?
Yeah, he homered in that game to left field. That was a fun game. I think he went the distance in that, if I'm not mistaken. But
well, last year he basically threw a no-hitter every game that he pitched,
just
right?
Yeah, just assume he went the distance. Yeah. I enjoy it. Like, I don't understand why it's such a sin to say, you know what? I look forward to the Cubs playing the White Sox. It's a fun little event for the city. Doesn't have any extra added significance in the city, but it's just okay to not totally hate everything. That's, I guess, what I'm getting at.
I agree. You know what? That is a good – I know that we again agree, so let's have a scorching hot take and say that we should hate everything. I say let's hate everything, because that's the scorching hot take of our generation. Let's hate everything.
Despite me saying I hate everything as a joke all the time.
I know.
Yeah. Like, anytime Derrick Rose would get hurt, I hate everything. Anytime the Cubs blow up, like if the Cubs lose tonight and Arrieta gets lit, I'm just going to say I hate everything.
Right.
But that's heat of the moment stuff. Right now I'm in a decent mood. I could say, like, it's okay to genuinely just like some things from time to time. You don't have to either love it or hate it. You can just have a mild opinion about it. And that's my hot take, is have a mild opinion.
Right. I mean, yeah, it doesn't have to be the be-all and end-all for you, but if you enjoy watching two Chicago teams get together for four games during the season, it's fun. There's nothing wrong with liking it. It's fun. So we're
close to each other. They two on the road, two at home. I like Len's suggestion of doing like a day-night doubleheader at the different ballpark. It's baseball. It's fun. Like, I you know, I'm due to do the make Cubs Sox fun again. That's what I'm going to start with, the slogan there. Make Cubs versus Sox fun again. Like Bryce Harper, make baseball fun again. I'm not going to mention the other person who uses that slogan.
Yeah, let's not talk about him. Yeah,
but it's but it's a lot of fun. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully the Cubs can win the all-important BP. It's not even sponsored by BP anymore, but the Crosstown Cup.
Right. I mean, can't they get a new sponsor for it? I mean,
somebody's got to step up. I mean, how about the B squared Crosstown Cup? Can we just start calling it that, and then maybe enough people will just continue calling it that?
I think it should be the B squared Crosstown Cup. I think both of our mugs should be on that plastic cup or whatever.
The teams are going to try to lose if that's the case.
That's true, and that would be sad because they wouldn't want to win the trophy. But don't the White Sox or don't the Cubs have to win 3 out of 4 to get the trophy back? If they split, the Sox keep it. Isn't that what it is?
I can't remember. That might be it, but I think
I don't. I mean, that's how little I care about that stupid thing.
It split the series. It used to be the team that won the last game won it because they actually tallied the last lap. But then I think you're right. I think they switched it where you have to like gain full control. I don't know. Let's just assume the Cubs are going to sweep, which they are, and then we don't have to worry about any sort of splitting logistics.
Right. Okay. So then let's end the podcast with your weekly prediction of the Cubs sweeping the week. So is that what you're predicting, Brian Beto?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You get the best reliever. They get a boost from him. They're not going to lose to the White Sox. Chris Sale's going to be cutting up jerseys on Thursday. He's not going to beat us. And then we get the Mariners in town this weekend, and we don't we stole Mike Montgomery from them, so they're basically a replacement level team at this point after losing Mike Montgomery. So we're going with another perfect week for the Cubs.
Oh my God, I love your Cub optimism. It just warms my heart. I'm going to go with the Cubs and White Sox splitting the four, and I'm going to go with the Cubs taking 2 out of 3 from Seattle. I would like for the Cubs to win all of them, obviously, but, you know, these Cubs-White Sox games are crazy, and they're very hard to predict, and so
that's why they're fun.
Right, they're fun. I agree. I'm just saying that it's very hard to predict Cubs-White Sox because, like, it was always on the years where the Cubs were good, the White Sox would beat up on the Cubs, and the years that the White Sox were good, the Cubs would, like, get out of the you-know-what performances from Ray Ordonez, and they would win, and it was like, what is going on here?
Ordonez.
I don't even know how Ray Ordonez just made this podcast, but he did. So I mean,
that's the reference of the entire podcast.
Yeah, so I'm going with a series win against the Mariners and a split of the four games of the White Sox.
4-3?
Yeah.
So you're three games off. Not too bad.
I mean, listen, I hope that your prediction is right. Like I say every week, I hope that you're right and I'm not. So, all right, we have a Facebook page. Beto, tell us about the Facebook page.
Search for B Squared, the B Squared Show. We'll post the link to this podcast there. It'll still be pretty topical, obviously, because a lot of people still are digesting all this Chapman stuff, and every single person has an opinion on it. So you haven't heard them all just yet. So listen to ours. I'll post the link on that as well.
Yes, and you can follow us on Twitter. He is at Brian Beto. I am at Jordan Burnfield. And we will post the podcast both on Podomatic, and then you can also subscribe and download on iTunes. We hope that you do, and that you will join us each time that we post this lovely podcast. So anyway, have a wonderful week. Enjoy Cubs White Sox, and Beto, I will talk to you next week.
Have a good one, pal.
You too, buddy. All right, this is the B Squared Podcast. Enjoy the week of baseball.